Baby Suggs died shortly after the brothers left, with no interest whatsoever in their leave-taking or hers. And right afterward, Setha and Denver decided to end the persecution by calling forth the ghost that tried them so. Perhaps a conversation, they thought, an exchange of views or something would help. So they held hands and said, "Come on, come on. You may as well just come on." The sideboard took a step forward, but nothing else did. "Grandma Baby must be stopping it," said Denver. She was 10 and still mad at Baby Suggs for dying. Setha opened her eyes. "I doubt that," she said. "Then why don't it come?" "You forgetting how little it is," said her mother. "She wasn't even 2 years old when she died. Too little to understand. Too little to talk much even." "Maybe she don't want to understand," said Denver. "Maybe. But if she'd only come, I could make it clear to her." Setha released her daughter's hand, and together they pushed the sideboard back against the wall. Outside, a driver whipped his horse into the gallop local people felt necessary when they passed 124. "For baby, she throws a powerful spell," said Denver. "No more powerful than the way I loved her," Setha answered, and there it was again, the welcoming cool of unchiseled headstones, the one she selected to lean against on tiptoe, her knees wide open as any grave. Pink as a fingernail it was, and sprinkled with glittering chips. 10 minutes, he said. "You got 10 minutes. I'll do it for free." 10 minutes for 7 letters. With another 10, could she have gotten dearly, too? She had not thought to ask him, and it bothered her still that it might have been possible, that for 20 minutes, a half hour, say, she could have had the whole thing, every word she heard the preacher say at the funeral, and all there was to say, surely, engraved on her baby's headstone. "Dearly beloved." But what she got settled for was the one word that mattered. She thought it would be enough, rutting among the headstones with the engraver, his young son looking on, the anger in his face so old, the appetite in it quite new. That should certainly be enough. Enough to answer one more preacher, one more abolitionist, and a town full of disgust. Counting on the stillness of her own soul, she had forgotten the other one, the soul of her baby girl. Who would have thought that a little old baby could harbor so much rage? Rutting among the stones under the eyes of the engraver's son was not enough. Not only did she have to live out her years in a house palsied by the baby's fury at having its throat cut, but those 10 minutes she spent pressed up against dawn-colored stone studded with star chips, her knees wide open as the grave, were longer than life, more alive, more pulsating than the baby blood that soaked her fingers like oil. "We could move," she suggested once to her mother-in-law. "What'd be the point?" asked Baby Suggs. "Not a house in the country ain't packed to its rafters with some dead Negro's grief. We lucky this ghost is a baby. My husband's spirit was to come back in here, or yours? Don't talk to me. You lucky. You got 3 left, 3 pulling at your skirts, and just 1 raising hell from the other side. Be thankful, why don't you? I had 8, every one of 'em gone away from me. 4 taken, 4 chased, and all I expect worrying somebody's house into evil." Baby Suggs rubbed her eyebrows. "My firstborn. All I can remember of her is how she loved the burned bottom of bread. Can you beat that? 8 children, and that's all I remember. That's all you let yourself remember, Saka had told her. But she was down to one herself, one alive, that is.